Okay, why this topic? Two reasons. First, many of us are leaders, and so it's relevant to us. Some of us will lead small groups, some of us will lead churches. So many of us are in leadership. But the second reason to pick this particular topic is that there does seem to be a connection, doesn't there, between anger and leadership. You can't help noticing that there are many leaders who are famous for their anger. Shall I say infamous? Not everyone will be into sport, but in the world of football, many people who know nothing about sport will still have heard of Alex Ferguson, the long-time manager of Manchester United. His legendary hairdryer treatments, his rants in the dressing room. Apparently, would get so close to your face that if your hair were wet, it would dry from the from the breath of the heated of his breath. So, anger and leadership does seem to go together. And there are those who, in training on leadership, encourage people to use their anger to lead well. Listen to this from one leader's blog. Since the dawn of time, great leaders have had one thing in common, anger. Anger shows you care. It is not, has never been, and never will be a negative emotion. It's a sign that something has deeply moved you. Moses was angry and freed a people from slavery. The founding fathers were angry and joined together to free a nation. Martin Luther King Jr. was angry and shared his dream with the world. They saw something wrong and would stop at nothing to see it righted. That's what leaders do. So the next time you feel anger at a situation in life or work, don't push it down. You're experiencing the first common trait of great leaders. Let it burn. Let it tell you what matters. Let it push you past the obstacles, doubters, and defeat. Let it push you past your own limitations. Let it destroy the barriers you put up around yourself and take you beyond anything you ever thought possible. When you take anger and act on it the right way, you will be a great leader. You will be a history maker. I quite enjoyed that. That was quite fun to read out. I don't know how you felt about it. Are they right? Is that right? The majority of people who write on leadership actually don't take that view. They take the view that anger needs to be channeled. You read about the story of Martin Luther King, actually, and you read an extraordinary account of a man who managed to face terrible things happening to him, but act in a way that refused to return violence for violence. We won't look at Donald Trump. That was your 5 minutes. So you're going to finish at nine. I want you to talk to people next to you. What sort of, do this anonymously, what sort of angry leaders have you encountered? Okay, what have they been like? I guess most of us will be able to pick people out of our memory who have in some sense been in leadership and who from whom we have seen or directly experienced them as angry leaders. What did that look like? Just share with one or two people near you some memories of that. Okay, my guess is, I just had this sort of slightly unnerving moment of realizing that there are a good number of people here who've sat under my leadership for the last 10 years or so. And I'm just sort of now feeling slightly unnerved about the conversations that may have gone on. But anyway, my guess is that as you've talked to one another, it won't only be that kind of banging the table, you know, red in the face anger that you've been describing to one another. There are all sorts of ways that leaders can express their anger. I won't take feedback, but I'm sure these are the things you've thought about. I guess you've thought about people who with their anger, just control people, squash them under, give them no freedom. That's maybe taken the form of bullying or demeaning others. Perhaps that's how you've seen anger express itself. Maybe you've seen an anger that excludes, that in a leader's anger with somebody, that they somehow hold them out of a privileged position, or just sort of push them out of an inner circle. And that's the way that you've seen anger expressed. Perhaps it's been in the withering comments, the sarcasm. That too is a form of anger, isn't it? Maybe it's been a coldness rather than a heat. Just a refusal to engage. That nasty, murderous kind of anger that just keeps people at a distance. Maybe you've seen leaders who have lived with their anger for so long that it has just, matured into, but that's entirely the wrong word, isn't it? Sort of corrupted itself into a bitterness and a sort of a long, low, burning anger. I think of a Christian minister who I remember who, having faced all sorts of very miserable things, had become so embittered that his anger was evident in every single sermon he preached. Whatever the passage was, it would land in critical rebuke of the church, because actually what he felt was anger with the people that he was preaching to. I don't think he knew it, but that's how it emerged. So the many faces of anger in leadership, all sorts of ways it can appear. What is the root of the connection? If you're with me in thinking that there is some sort of connection between anger and leadership, I think it's in the realm of control. I think that somehow is the link, that leaders sense that they ought to be in control. At some level, they're supposed to do that. And when that's not the case, when they feel that they're not able to be in control, they get angry. You're not doing what I say. You're not treating me as I demand. You won't follow me where I'm leading. You're stopping me from succeeding in the way that I want to succeed. And maybe it's more godly than that. You're the person in the way of this church succeeding. And because I'm not able to control things in the way that I want to control things, it makes me angry. We're going to look at a passage now, and it's not an easy passage. Christopher referred to it earlier on. Most of the things, I mean, all of the stuff that we're thinking about anger during the course of this week must be relevant to the anger that gets expressed in leadership. So, in a sense, everything that we're thinking will have some relevance to the problem of anger in leaders. But I'm going to this passage because I think there may be some particular things that apply to leaders and their anger. And Numbers 20 is such a place, I think. I want to acknowledge that there is dispute amongst those who write on this passage as to exactly what Moses' error was. Nevertheless, I think there's enough here for us to engage with and make sense of. So let me read the passage, and then I'm going to get you to think about it together. So we're in the wilderness, and we are approaching the promised land, Moses leading the people. In the first month, the whole Israelite community arrived at the desert of Zin, and they stayed at Kadesh. There Miriam died and was buried. Now there was no water for the community, and the people gathered in opposition to Moses and Aaron. They quarreled with Moses and said, "If only we died when our brothers fell dead before the Lord. Why did you bring the Lord's community into this wilderness that we and our livestock should die here? Why did you bring us out of Egypt to this terrible place? It has no corn, no figs, grapevines or pomegranates, and there is no water to drink." Moses and Aaron went from the assembly to the entrance to the tent of meeting and fell face down. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. The Lord said to Moses, "Take the staff, and you and your brother Aaron gather the assembly together, Speak to that rock before their eyes, and it will pour out its water. You will bring water out of the rock for the community so that they and their livestock can drink. So Moses took the staff from the Lord's presence, just as he commanded him. He and Aaron gathered the assembly together in front of the rock, and Moses said to them, "Listen, you rebels, must we bring water out of this rock?" Then Moses raised his arm and struck the rock twice with his staff. Water gushed out, and the community and their livestock drank. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not trust in me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, you will not bring this community into the land I give them." These were the waters of Meribah, where the Israelites quarreled with the Lord and where he was proved holy among them. Now, it's a salutary moment, and something deeply significant is going on here. This is the basis on which Moses, the great leader of the people, is forbidden from entering the promised land. It's a big thing. And in case you think, "Well, no, are we really sure that Moses, that it was anger that was the problem here?" Well, Psalm 106 certainly points us in that direction. "By the waters of Meribah, they angered the Lord, and trouble came to Moses because of them, for they rebelled against the Spirit of God, and rash words came from Moses' lips." So here's my question, here's what I want you to think about for a moment. What is it that Moses gets wrong? You see those words that the Lord says to Moses, "Because you did not trust in me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites." What's God mean by that? In what way did Moses' words and actions fail to honor God as holy? And does this give us any clues for understanding why anger in a Christian leader is such a problem? Okay, I'm going to give you about 5 minutes. Talk with others near you. See if you can puzzle anything out of that. It's not easy, but I think there are some really important things for us to spot here. Okay, take 5 minutes. Think about that together. I know this is a tricky passage, and it deserves longer than we've got. And I'm just going to take one or two ideas on this, because I want to leave time for how you might try and help Moses, because we're going to have a little counselling session with Moses in a minute. One or two ideas. What do you think was getting wrong? It's the hand at the back there. Or just shout out. Who's that? Ben?
Moses adds into that his own rebuke, a rebuke that the Lord had not commanded him to give. Yep. He misrepresents the grace of God. He presents God as an angry God at a time when God has been exceedingly gracious to his people. And that's
brilliant.
Brilliant.
No, really helpful, Ben. Thank you. I hope you caught that. God actually had no rebuke for the people on this occasion. He had done previously, on a previous occasion where they'd done some of the grumbling, but this time not. And so Moses adds something in that God didn't have there. Brilliant. Another comment over here, yeah.
Moses is trying to do God's job for him, which sometimes we do when we want to fix people, you know, we want to sort them out on God's behalf.
Brilliant, thank you. Yes, that's a brilliantly crisp way of putting it, isn't it? There was a sense in which Moses thought he needed to do God's job for him. Which comes in with that, I probably should have, I'm wondering, that phrase, "because you did not trust in me enough to honour me as holy." You know, somehow, you know, doubting that God is capable of achieving what he needs to achieve. And, you know, I need to do some of the work for him. Now, I've got an adding in, as Ben suggests, is maybe part of that. So I think it is complicated. Oh, no, go on, give us another one.
Just to ask you, how is holiness compromised?
I think it goes something like this. Moses ends up with a sense that it's, you know, God's failing to rebuke them and I need to do it. You know, clearly a rebuke is needed, so I'll do that. Clearly it's me that gets the water out of the rock. So I don't just... Instead of, he's told to gather the people and speak to the rock, instead of which he rebukes the people and strikes the rock, as if it's drawing the attention to himself. I'm the one who gets the water out of the rock, you know, with my staff and my double strike. And so the attention comes to him. Moses, the angry one. Moses, the miracle worker. And I think what therefore happens is that God, as it were, disappears. Because all the attention is being drawn to Moses and Moses' anger and Moses' rebuke. And God, who he fails to trust, kind of, as it were, disappears behind him. I think it's something like that. And I think, therefore, the separateness, the otherness, the greatness of God, which is all captured in this idea of his holiness, is obscured by the way that Moses acts. Okay, but let's do the next question then, which is, let's suppose that you so happened to bump into Moses just on his way out. He's gone to get the staff from the presence of the Lord, and he's on his way, and you can see he's all wound up and a bit sort of ranty and ravey, and you've got a chance to talk to him. What would you say? What would your conversation be like? Again, just take a couple of minutes. It's all you got. Actually, I mean, that's generous, isn't it? Because actually you wouldn't normally have any, you know, I'm giving you 2 minutes to think about it, which you don't normally have in personal conversations. So there you go. How kind. 2 minutes. Okay, I'd say we've only got a couple of minutes left, so let's have some bright ideas. Anybody wave a hand or just yell something out. What might you say? Yeah, go on.
Moses, it's not about you.
You've been reading my bullet points. That's exciting. Yeah, Moses, it's not about you. I think that'd be a brilliant phrase. Okay, others? What else might you, what other line might you take? Yep. And that is so good. I'm speechless. And would your tactic there be loving Moses or humiliating the leader of the seminar? that's good. I like that. Yes. Okay. It is funny, isn't it? Bereavement does that to you. You do get angry. I think it's a link to what Christopher was saying earlier on. Where are you, Christopher? The way that anger is stirred by bereavement. I think that really does happen. So it's a very interesting idea. Thank you. Yep, another one.
What did God say?
Yeah, what did God say? Get the accuracy of, you know, obedience to exactly what God said. Good. Others? What are you about to say? So just get him to... Would you say it in that sort of angry way?
If you're that far away, I would.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay. Yes, very good. Okay, one or two more? Yep. Yeah, so capture your own experience of grace and speak out of that. To try and, you know, alert him to the experience of grace. And someone had a hand just behind. Yeah?
What will the consequences be of the way that you're going to do this?
Yeah, think about the consequences of the line that you're taking. Yeah, good.
Try not to be more angry than God.
Yeah, try not to be more angry than God. Yeah, that'd be a good line, wouldn't it? They're all good. Here are the ones that I came up with. It's not about you was my top one. I thought this idea of... Because I do think there's something about control. And I think the notion of, look, God is control, so you don't have to be. I think he's very liberating. See lots of people scribbling these down. I can get these put on the website, so you don't need to write them all down. I mean, I don't know they're that good, but if I just save you scribbling. An accent on humility. Be humble. Don't lord it over others. Because I think anger comes from that position of righteousness. You know, gazing down on others. So to reinforce a humility. You could read 1 Peter 5 to him. Emphasizing that there is a chief shepherd and we are only ever under shepherds. Picking up what people have said already, God's people need words of grace more than they need words of judgment. And then to emphasize that it isn't our dignity and our reputation that matters. I think a lot of the anger of leaders spills out of that notion that somehow it will be terrible if I am in some way humiliated or if I am shown not to be strong. Their anger is a sort of reaction to their own fear of looking foolish. How often have you seen that? The response to seeming foolish is to get angry. And then this last, even if our church or our ministry or our journey to the promised land should decline and fail, the progress of the kingdom is never in doubt. You know, as leaders, we can begin to think that it all is in our hands. And again, that's why I think this issue of control is so powerful. And fear and anger, are they overlapping categories as well? Because we're terrified that everything's going to fall apart. And so we get angry in an attempt to try and pull it back together. And actually, our anger is the very thing that's splintering it apart. So those are some of the directions that occurred to me. You've had great ideas as well.